I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 505's After Show. It's the after show.
It is.
It's going to be a special one tonight. Not that they're not all special, but tonight's extra special.
Extra? He gets extra?
Extra, extra. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I guess.
Took him extra long to win to get here.
I guess it did.
All right, without further ado, I think he's ready to go. Coming in from Vegas, our champion this weekend at the Dynamic Disc Open, Kelvin Heimberg!
Hey, buddy.
Hi, Kelvin. Hey. Oh. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Just got into Vegas here this evening. Had a couple days of driving through some not so great weather, but I'm here, and I'll be playing the Las Vegas Challenge this week.
Yeah. First of all, of course, congratulations about Dynamic Disc Open this weekend. We'll talk about that. But one of the main things I'm seeing on social media is a ton of our players that are heading west, whether it be toward California for the for Masters Cup, whether it's to Colorado for the 303 Q Series event or to Vegas. Feels like you guys are all experiencing some kind of nasty weather. What were you driving through?
So definitely high winds. I got hailed on Kansas. I got stuck kind of on 70 a little past Denver last night, with some extremely high winds and snow. I got a text from Terry.
You can ignore it. I do.
I think last night, like I started going through, 70 through the passes, and it was probably like sustained 40 plus mile an hour winds with gusts 60 to 70. So, I ended up pulling off and I got a hotel in Georgetown. There was like a severe wind warning until 6 a.m. this morning, but, was able to get through all the passes this morning and drove the rest of the way to Vegas.
That's wild. And I think of even just recently last night, I think in Avery and Leah Jenkins, like neck of the woods, Pawhuska, Oklahoma, there was some tornadoes and some insane stuff that passed through there. Obviously stuff just ripping all over and then lots of snow and everything else. So good to hear you're safe. I just MapQuested it. I just Google Mapped.
Wow.
It.
How old are you?
Yeah.
Rand McNally?
1,291 miles. We'll call it 1,292. 18 hours and 59 minutes is what it says from Emporia to Vegas. Ouch.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think it took me a long time. It's definitely a long time. Yeah, I woke up this morning and warm out of the snow, but I mean, I think I was driving like 40 miles an hour on this morning at the speed relay, so with the thins.
Yeah, that, does, especially, I mean, you're in a big touring van, so to speak. And so when you talk about those high winds, like you look like you're almost as tall as those drivable billboards around in Vegas. Like you got plenty of sidewall there.
Yeah, definitely not ideal. If it's like a headwind or tailwind, it's not too bad, but you get into crosswinds and it's really miserable driving.
Okay, well, good to hear you're safe, and we won't keep you too long. It sounds like your internet's maybe just a tad choppy anyway, but does it feel any different to come back, and it's been a little over a year for this big of a win? How does it feel? Is it like riding a bike, or does it feel any more or less special than any other victory?
You know, it's always great to win. I mean, that's what we go out there and try to do. I don't think it really feels any more or less special. You know, I've definitely had pretty decently long spans without a win before. I think, I don't know when that was, a couple years ago. I think I might've had a similar span between wins. So it's hard to win, and sometimes, you know, it just doesn't happen for a while, but all you can do is just keep trying, put yourself in position, and know that you can do it when you give yourself the opportunity eventually.
Does it mean any more when you win an event that you haven't won in the past? Like, you've got Jonesboro a few times, but to get a new one, kind of like, you know, another new trophy, or just thinking to yourself, oh, this is another kind of course that I know I can do well on, even if you have taken second or third or fourth in the past.
Yeah, no, it's definitely cool to win an event that you haven't won before. As you said, I have played well in Emporia in the past. So I definitely knew I was capable of, you know, competing at a high level and coming out with a win there. I just, you know, hadn't done it yet, but I do feel very comfortable out there at Country Club. It definitely sets up really well for me. You know, there aren't a ton of shots that call, you know, for forehand for me, you know, since that's not really 100% right now. You know, it's nice that I can kind of work around that. It's not like a necessity out there. Generally, when there is a forehand favored hole, there is like some kind of backhand workaround, even if it is a harder shot, but it's still viable, and you know, it allows you to still score in the hole.
How long, you mentioned your forehand, do you have a timetable, like when you think it's going to be healthy enough to start kind of whipping them around again?
I don't have a timetable. You know, it's just kind of taking it, you know, week by week and just seeing what my body is telling me. You know, I feel comfortable throwing shorter ones right now, but I definitely don't feel as comfortable throwing really hard ones. I wasn't throwing any off the tee out there at Country Club. But yeah, it's just, you know, we'll see. I really don't have a timetable, and I don't know how long it's going to take, but okay. Hopefully sooner than later.
The glass blown trophy that you won this weekend, it is glass blown. It seems like it's the largest it's ever been. And then of course that, you know, people calling for bowling balls and everything else. Where does this trophy rank among your trophies in terms of just how you, I don't want to say value it, but how you look and feel about having a trophy of that style?
I mean, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it is definitely big, but I think, I don't know. It's cool to look at. It's got like some glitter and sparkle in there. Like, I think it's a pretty cool trophy. And I mean, you know, they've always kind of had these glass blown balls or whatnot. So it is cool to have one. I would say, I'm a pretty big fan of like the glass or like the crystal trophies. I feel like those tend to look pretty cool. So, I would say it ranks as a pretty cool trophy. I don't know the exact number. I'd have to like really think of where it ranks and what I have, but, I don't know. I'd put it up there. I like some of the other ones, like, I think one of my favorite ones, it doesn't even really feel like a win, but it's my tie with Ricky, the little Ledgestone, whatever goblet or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But, I got the goblet. I beat him out at Idlewild the next week. So, mm-hmm. I like that one. I got a pretty cool vase from Memorial back in 2020. That one's pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know. I think I tend to like the glass trophies.
Yeah. And that vase probably, I presumably came from Mace Man, also a glass blown, vase of sorts that we've seen at USDGCs and Memorial mm-hmm. and a couple other events as of recently. And, absolutely, I think, yeah, I agree. They're absolutely beautiful. It's just, it's become, I feel like such a staple of being, obviously the glass blown open and then having these, they just stand out as such a unique trophy overall. And then this year they just went so big with it.
I was kind of surprised when I first saw it on FPL. I was like, wow, they went all out this year.
Yeah. Even
guy ran out of air.
Yeah. They're heavy.
Is it mentally or physically, tough to get done with that event, to drive all of these hours and all of these miles to show up for an A-tier, four round A-tier using multiple courses? Like, does that drag on you at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you're, traveling that far in that period of time, it's definitely, going to take a toll on the body. And, but I mean, I knew, going into the season, I was playing this one and Innova really wanted me here. I didn't have to, play DDO and then make that trek. I could have taken that week off. Mm. I kind of put this on myself, but I wanted to play DDO, especially with, how close I was to winning there last year. I wanted to go back and try to do it this year. So, I think really this crunch is kind of really on me, since I knew this was, just like one that was, in a way, I wouldn't say non-negotiable, but, I was really wanted out here. So I knew I was going to be out here. It is definitely, a grind. But, and I actually am really surprised to see there's a decent number of pretty good players on the registration for the event. So quite a few people are coming out here to play this event still, even though it isn't a elite series, which is cool. I'm sure, the event team probably had a lot of questions, when they, as to whether or not, they would get any good turnout when they found out they were no longer on the tour. So I'm sure they're pretty happy about it. I know they ended up moving their dates from early in the year to a little bit later to try to make it work. But, I've had some success here out at Vegas. I've won in Vegas a couple of times, so I'm excited to get back out there. I haven't even looked at the course schedule. I don't know if I'm playing all three courses or if it's two courses like last year, but I'm sure they're not too different. They don't tend to make too many changes out there, so I should have some familiarity with most of them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Being a four-day event and just coming off DDO, how much practice are you going to do? You get one day out there and just kind of walk the other ones, or are you going to try to get each, if you're playing two, get both of them in, or are you going to kind of treat this one a little bit more lax?
Well, definitely for sure get one course practice in. I mean, I don't know if it's, one, two, or three. I'm assuming it would be either two or three courses. Yeah, I might walk another. I know, I rode in town later this afternoon, this evening, and it was pretty hot. So I don't know how realistic it would be to go out there and get two rounds in. It was like 90 something degrees on my car thermometer when I rolled in. So I think maybe just one round tomorrow. I'll probably look at the course schedule, see which course I play first. I'll probably end up just playing that one. I feel like, just to make sure I can be comfortable with the first course, and then you know, the end of a course hasn't really changed that much. Honestly, none of them really changed. So I think it should be pretty easy to, you know, go out there and feel comfortable.
I'm looking at your schedule coming up, and I see you're going to do the West Coast swing. You've got Portland and Beaver State, and then the Turku a week later, and then a week later, Preserve. Are you really going to do the Turku? Or are you going to fly out there for one event?
No, I have been lazy and have not submitted. I wasn't sure what I was doing earlier in the year, sure. But I'm actually not going to be playing for a decent little bit after Portland. I have a family wedding the week of the Preserve, so I won't be playing the Preserve. Mm. So I think the next one back for me will be Des Moines, and then after Des Moines, I'll be flying over to Europe.
Okay. I was just going to try to even help you out.
Well, that's like a whole month vacation. Nice.
And look at your course schedule, but now I'm getting lost in lost in the sauce here. If I could only download this and take a better look at it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm sure I got an email with it.
Exactly. And we know they're on top of it. And I'll go ahead and say, in essence, kind of echo that. Obviously, you know, there was some question at the beginning of the year. Las Vegas seemed to be taken by surprise that they weren't going to be kicking off the tour. We saw the tour opening in Florida this year. And then Las Vegas and their team really had, I don't know if scramble is the right word, but they definitely were put in a predicament of, hey, when do we host the event? How big do we go? And they essentially said, we want to go as big as we've ever gone any other time. We're just simply not going to be on the tour. And then I think ultimately lobbied and requested to have this date, which turns out to still be a relatively busy weekend, but trying to get the players heading from, you know, Kansas into California for next weekend, and then being a stop either on the way in or on the way back out, turned out to be, you know, the best scenario. So hats off to all of the Las Vegas crew, because I know this has been just as big or bigger than any other event. And being the 25th annual, they didn't want to, you know, they weren't out to cut any corners or anything. So I wish everybody the best, because I know there's an insane amount of work that's going on out there. And then I think with that, maybe you do or don't know this, but I think per typical fashion of the last few years, there's going to be still a Sexton Firebird release along with a signature disc of yours. Is it, are we looking at a Destroyer or Toro, or what's the plan? Do you know?
I believe there is some release. I don't know. I don't know much about it.
Yeah. I think it's a Toro again.
Yeah.
Have you hired anyone to get your Sexton Firebird yet?
No, nothing for nothing. Purely from a collectability standpoint, I need one for my collection. So maybe I got to lean into you, my good buddy. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking to flip it. I'm not trying to sell it. I just want one.
I know
for
that's
the collection.
Why I asked.
So if you want to hook a brother up,
I'll see what I can do. Maybe I can cut the line or something.
I mean, I do buy your Toros every year as well, I feel like. So I've been, and okay, so if you could get me one of each, I will gladly pay you for
I've
that.
Got the Kelvin bag too. I got the Squatch bag. I mean, we're just
fanboys here.
That's right. I mean, what can I say? And
I guess I have to come through for you now.
And if you ever, you know, want some of those old Kelvin Heimberg, you know, Tour Series Destroyers I have from early days, are you still throwing those?
Which ones?
Like the old ones that you like that I had way back when?
The first run of Halo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have one or two of those in the bag. I got one in the bag right now. Yeah. I still bag one. I threw some out there at a DDO. It's really overstable.
Okay. So, you know, maybe there's some trade
maybe
bait.
Can trade.
Yeah, there's some trade bait out trade. There. I'd be all about it because, I've been standing in those lines. Usually I go live and stand in those lines for a few hours just to get those discs. And, this year I won't be out there. Someone did ask on the board, I believe, don't fully quote me or bet the farm on this, but I believe Gatekeeper is filming MPO and FPO and will be doing post-production coverage. I don't know if it's for sure next day. I think it is. But MPO and FPO is done by Gatekeeper. At one point, I put in some form of a bid, but I'm guessing they offered to do both. I don't know if it was a financial or just a convenience thing. But so best of luck to them out there. But Gatekeeper will be out there. is what I recall. Oh, no, no, no. Wait.
Ace Run saying GK Pro.
Ace Run saying it's GK Pro. Well, then I'm thoroughly confused because I thought I was told Gatekeeper at one point.
Maybe Ace Run is wrong. We don't know. What does that guy know? It's not like he cameras with him every week.
Jeez. All right.
Yeah, what does he mean?
We had a lengthy discussion before you joined us. Just aggregate playoffs, love or hate, you know, any given scenario. What any thought on the aggregate playoff like we saw on the FPO side this weekend? What do you think of the implementation of them?
You know, it's not something I'd ever seen before. I think it's kind of cool. I don't know. I haven't put much thought into it, but I think it's cool. You get to see, you know, some more decision making as opposed to just you know, if I don't make this, I lose on the first hole.
Okay.
So I think it could be cool. I don't know. I definitely need to think about it a little more. Need to see more aggregate playoffs played through, but I don't know. It seemed like it played pretty cool, honestly. Like I think it's a pretty neat concept.
Yeah, especially when you think about a hole like 16 that clearly has, you know, decided a world championships just a couple of years ago with Aaron and Paul, and it's decided, yeah, you know, Haley and Holland last year for the win. So to have it not necessarily be the one throw on the one hole and officially ending it at that point. One question somebody posed in the on the board earlier that we never really got around to talking about ourselves is the new drop zone location on 16. Yay, yeah. Nay, or do you what are your thoughts on it?
I don't know. I don't think it probably played the way they thought. I'm not a huge fan of those like shorter drop zone putt, say par. I don't really like those. And I don't think it even probably played the way they thought. I mean, people weren't really running it. So like, mm-hmm. I think they were like trying to entice more people to run it and then maybe go in the water, but I didn't see that really happening. I think people, once they missed the island, they were just accepting bogey. At least from the old one, it was a little farther. Like bogey wasn't even like guaranteed. You could throw it in the water again, you know. So I wasn't a huge fan of the new one, I guess. I don't think it played the way they wanted to. I think they expected more people to be a little more aggressive.
I really like the old one. I felt it was iconic. When someone did happen to hit it, you had all the spectators there that you could kind of the image of Ricky running it through or mm-hmm. Cy hitting it a couple of years ago. I personally think Kelvin's right in that it just from where it was, there was almost no chance to go at it unless you absolutely were in like the final round and you needed it. I don't think the incentive was there. And whereas if the other one, you could throw it in on any given try. And
Along those lines, then how about, you know, Johnny and I closed out the show talking about the change on 18 and what are your thoughts about how that played out overall and how they moved it?
I think as a whole, it's probably a slightly easier hole. It's definitely an easier hole than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it scored because you did have people like taking huge numbers on it. So mm-hmm. I feel like if you remove those like huge outliers, it would have scored easier. But I think I liked it. I think, you know, there's a lot of room for, you know, scoring separation. You know, you can have someone go out there, get a three on it, but it's like really not unheard of for someone to maybe even bogey it. You know, it just takes one little hiccup. Like you throw an inbounds drive, but then somehow mess up the layup or, you know, you throw in the water or whatnot. It's pretty easy to take a bogey on as well, even though like if you throw a good drive, it is a lot of short shots. I parted every single round. Like I did not play that hole very well. I think it played pretty cool. I do like how it had like a pretty cool risk reward option for Eagle if that is something you wanted to go for.
So to hear you parted all three rounds, sounds disappointing. Like,
yeah, I mean, how'd you F it up? It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, what did you do?
I parred it.
Yeah, but how? No, like, just, what terrible shots are you throwing?
Did you
someone miss, of your skill miss to get
putts?
Par?
Yeah, do you miss putts when you're on the island? Did you?
I mean, I was always on the island. You know, the last day I wasn't like, you know, yeah. I mean, I threw that last shot. I wasn't even really trying to get close. I was just going straight across. I'm not hitting anything. Just get me on the grass so I can lay up.
Okay.
But like, yeah, the other 2 days, I think I missed one circle, one putt. And then I had another putt that was like just outside the circle. Just not great approaches, honestly. You know, it's like one of those shots that, you know, it's right there, but you know, the distance can be a little bit deceiving, and then, you know, it is an island, so it can be a little bit nervy.
Did you feel anything different on that final round? Your putting looked so good. Like, did you feel different? Was it just that everything happened to be going in this round, or did you make any tweaks? What was happening on the final round?
Yeah, no, I definitely felt really good and really comfortable on the putting green. I used a different putter that round than I used the other two rounds.
Mm.
I put a new putter in the bag.
Same mold?
Same mold, just a new KC AVR. And just, I don't know. I haven't really been super stoked on my putting for the past few weeks, so. And I really wasn't the first two rounds. I definitely had a handful of circle one misses those first couple rounds that I wasn't too stoked about. So kind of changed something up. And honestly, like, it's a putter. It really realistically has nothing to do with the putter. Like, I mean, I feel like, I don't know. Putting is like one of those things where it's just, you're like, you're lobbing it out in the basket. So there's not a whole, it's not moving fast. Like, it's not, the disc isn't going to like turn because, I don't know. They're like, all those little micro things that happen when discs are moving way faster aren't happening with a putter. So I think it was more just a mental thing. I just needed something to be different. But yeah, I felt very comfortable out there. And, you know, I feel like that was the first time in a few weeks where I was just letting the putter fly.
Obviously, you got out to the incredible start, you know, getting 7 for 7. Was there a point, and then you're directly, because Ricky's on the card and seeing what Ricky's doing and so on and so forth and everyone else, was there a point where you felt like, okay, this is mine to lose. Like, I should have this under control now, and let's just close this thing out. At what point in the round was that?
I don't know. I don't really feel like you're ever really that safe on that course. Like, that, okay, that finishing stretch, 16, 17, 18, like all of those could be two stroke swings, and it really wouldn't be, you know, that hard to imagine it happening on any of those holes. So, I don't think there was really ever like, I felt, you know, after 16, I feel like I felt pretty good, but, okay, but before before 16, like, it was definitely still up in the air, you know. Like, there was definitely nothing was set in stone until after that hole. And even then, nothing's really set in stone, but
sure.
I mean, it definitely would have taken a lot of mishaps.
When you threw 16, did you expect it to stay on the island in that final round? Everybody saw it hit the wall, took kind of a funny angle where then it hit the ground and rolled better. Whereas we saw a lot of people, like, when you let go of that disc, did you think, nah, there's a stroke?
No, I mean, I let go of that disc, and it was pretty similar to the shot I threw the day before. It was just too high.
Okay.
I'm definitely trying to throw that shot lower and more driven, but I don't know if I just was worried about that crosswind, like, slamming the disc down, but it really wasn't doing that all week, even though that crosswind was there. So the disc was definitely thrown too high. I was fortunate to hit the wall. And yeah, I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a kick to the stomach when watching your shot coming at a funny angle, hit the wall, hit the ground, roll better, watching Ricky hit dead center of that back, get and roll all the way across the island and go OB. Little insult to injury, unfortunately, for Rick. But, you know, what do you do? Not your fault.
I think you just don't play to hit the wall.
Really? You don't play to hit the wall?
If you don't want any chance of anything funny happening, you don't hit the wall. But I also don't think the wall should be there. But
Fair enough. Yeah.
Hot take.
I'm anti-wall.
Well, so. Is it fair to say, like, that's kind of the, I don't want to say the ultimate bailout, but you're playing for that back wall. I mean, it's obviously a pretty damn convenient backstop. I mean, as it's intended to be, but do you feel like it's just too forgiving, or I don't want to say too easy, but I mean, how would you describe that back wall then?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely forgiving. I don't know. I actually talked to Rusko a little bit about it. I think they put it there because they wanted more people to run the island. I guess a lot of people weren't running the island when there wasn't a wall there, which I didn't realize was a thing.
I didn't know I couldn't do it.
I didn't know I couldn't let people lay up. What?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I just feel like whenever you're playing towards like a wall as a backboard, I don't like it. I feel like it removes some of like the touch from the game. I think like in the end, like we're looking at a 320-foot shot that is, you know, well within the range of everyone in our division, you know, throwing a slow disc, they can throw a fast disc high and try to spike it on there. There's so many ways you can try to approach that island without slamming into a wall and actually sticking it. And maybe I feel this way a little more right now because, you know, it wasn't super windy this year, but I don't know. I don't like the wall.
So,
I mean, as a chump, I'd be aiming, like I said, I'd be aiming hardcore for that wall. That's the only thing I'm looking at, but I could also see for speed of play. Like you have without that wall, 20, 30% more people going out of bounds. And that I could see how that could maybe slow down the round to where you would have a weight on 16.
But instead they stay in bounds and they run at the putt, go out of bounds from there, and they're still dealing with more timing. So then I have to segue that right into the wall on 18, which Johnny and I just had a conversation about. Does some or any of that apply to those massive boulders on 18? Do you like those? Would you rather see a painted line or something else there?
I think if it was a painted line in that instance, it would look pretty lame. I think in that case, it kind of needs it aesthetically as some kind of something to differentiate it from the rest of, you know, what's behind it. Mm-hmm. But in the case of 16, it's literally a massive land and water. Like you know, you have everything to find around it. You don't really need any border. I also just think, like, I don't know. I mean, it's like typically I feel like I don't feel like those boulders really came that much into play on 18 either. I feel like most of the shots coming into that hole were much, like, most of the time people were throwing in that hole and it's under 250 feet. So I just don't see, like, I don't think people were like aiming to smoke it into that back wall, but I could be wrong. Maybe that's what I should have been doing, you know.
Why are we asking you? You parred it three times. Jeez.
I mean, it's also a difference in the style of green. You've got 18, which has a sloped up green where people can drive it into the ground if they really want, mm-hmm. and then you have the boulders there, so maybe the boulders have less of effect, as opposed to 16, where there is no, I mean, the island is kind of a mound in general, but as far as 16 goes, I don't mind the wall, but maybe cut the height in half.
That just, was funny. Just, I was thinking the same
just
thing.
Because the worst thing is to watch someone get just a crappy little roll off the back of the island, which it would prevent that, but it makes it a lot more difficult to just drive that wall, to think like someone like me be like, hey, there it is.
If you're hitting it in the air, you're like, you're throwing it way too hard, the wall already.
Yeah, right? But that is kind of the play for a lot of people. I feel like you can just like drive into that wall like that, and then you make your choice on whether or not you're running the putt when you get up there.
Sure.
You know, how you're feeling. I don't know. I feel like it removes some of the decision making off the tee.
So we'll go. Yeah. Last point on these two instances, and only because this was a rumor that I heard. Rumor mill. Rumor whispers.
That's creepy.
Would you like to see any form of, I'll say, six inch barrier or wall that defines the front of those either of those island shots at the front. So rather than the string on 16, and there, I think there's probably a string on 18. What if there were a six inch wall, as in you have to basically get over that in the air? Would dumb, indifferent, any thoughts on that?
I feel like it would look very, very bad.
Okay.
But I don't know. I feel like optically it would look very weird. And also, like, I don't know. I think it's like, so if I take 16, for example, like, mm-hmm. then, like, I don't know. You're eliminating the possibility for, you know, a roll away off that green into the water. I don't know.
I guess I was thinking of it more from a driving perspective, but I didn't think of it from a, you know, preventing a roll into the water perspective.
If someone hits the basket and rolls. But I think it's also really cool. Some of the water skips we saw, like we saw Missagannon. Sure. I mean, that adds some excitement, and to have the wall to know that the minute that thing gets too low, that's going to be out of bounds. Right now we've got a little bit of showmanship. You know, you could have a Reed Frescura who tries to skip it off the water for all we know. Yeah. But I the front wall, no go, Ter.
Okay. No, and yeah, I'm talked out of it.
Yeah. I don't know, without that back wall, the water skip, like as an actual play on 16, is way more viable. Like I think that's how I used to play that hole when it got like super windy, is I would try to skip it off the water. I would drive something super, super hard at the water and try to get that pop up, because you get that little nose up pop, mm-hmm. and it kind of kills a lot of the speed, and it's easier to like kind of get something to stop that way. So, you know, that isn't really a play anymore with that back wall, but that definitely was a pretty viable option in the past, or maybe only for crazy people. I don't know.
All right. Last couple of weekends, fifth place, excuse me, at Champions Cup, obviously the win here. Is there anything you attribute, you know, we'll say I'll call it a mishap misstep, whatever you want to call it, at Music City. But otherwise, you know, the last couple of months have been pretty much on par with top level golf, top five positioning. Is there anything holding you back from continuing to place in the top four or five spots or podium week in and week out right now?
You know, the only thing that's really bothering me is, you know, I don't really have my full forehand. Mm-hmm. You know, some courses that doesn't mean as much as others. And then, you know, like I think really where I would say, like, universally it's the biggest issue is, you know, those days that you're a little off and you're putting yourself in positions you're not planning on being in, you know, sometimes that forehand really can bail you out. You can throw some bigger shots from some funkier lies, but you know, if I'm throwing well off the tee, that's generally not too big of an issue. So it's just about, you know, throwing good tee shots and then making putts. People win for a long time just throwing backhands. It is definitely a little bit harder, but you definitely can.
And that's got to feel that much better knowing that you successfully completed that this weekend.
I threw some forehands.
Yeah, somebody asked me, I think a fan, as we were walking around, said something about, is Kelvin throwing forehands right yet or something? I said, I think it's pretty reserved, you know, in a case-by-case short range maybe. And then literally it was like two throws later, you were throwing a forehand approach of sorts. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. Like that. I don't know if we're going to see a lot more than that, but there's your answer. So,
yeah, I probably had a couple around out there last week.
Or you could watch the Ace Run video coming out tomorrow where you throw lefty, right?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something else. It's something else.
Without spoiling it too much, because I saw an Instagram post last week, but Ace Run Productions are good friends over there. Well, at least one of them. Felix is all right. What? Wow. I'm just kidding. What should people be expecting on said video that's dropping over there at Ace Run?
You know, a good time, maybe a little bit of cheating,
okay,
possibly killing innocent bystanders,
okay,
but overall quality of shot, at least for me,
mm-hmm.
maybe like 1 to 2 out of 10, but there are some pretty sick shots during that round. So just,
okay.
I think if there was like a not top 10 sequence, throughout the entire video, I would be the majority of the shots. I think I would be maybe, I'd probably get like 7 to 8 of the top 10 worst shots.
Wow. So you're setting the bar low, and to set it up for everyone, it's you and Zach Melton teamed up, if I recall, against Zach Arlinghaus and Chris Dickerson, and everybody's throwing opposite handed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a little different for Zach Arlinghaus, you know, he on a normal day is left hand, backhand, right hand, forehand. So he was right hand, backhand, left hand, forehand. But, you know, yeah, it's weird, but I don't know why he does that.
Well, I give you guys a lot of credit for being vulnerable like that and showing somebody what I'm going to guess is less than stellar golf, even if it is your opposite
hand. I disagree. I think they do it all so they can all just make fun of each other.
Yeah, but now it's going to be like on the internet and everybody else is going to have to, you know, have a chance to watch it.
Okay, I'll give them that.
So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to get better, you know, maybe one day. Yeah. Actually, no, there's no chance. Like I'm so far from ever throwing a left-handed shot on tour. Like it's not even close.
From your recollection, because I can think of course, Nico, and I can think of Eagle. Those two jump out at me. Who, if you had to pick the top five players to throw an offhand or an opposite handed shot, Who jumps to mind if you said, yes, this is a contest and I'm going to pick these five people? Who would that be?
I mean, three. Well, two of them got to be Nico and Eagle because I've seen them do it.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Arlinghaus is also in there. I know he's throwing right hand, backhand in tournament.
Okay.
Trying to think if I've seen any.
Bradley Williams is a name that's getting thrown on the board. Is he of that caliber?
You know, I'd believe it. I'm trying to. I feel like I had to have seen him throw lefty before. It was probably just so good. I thought it was a right-handed shot, honestly.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone else, but yeah, Brad would probably be a good one. I'm trying to think. There's got to be, because there's definitely some people that. Oh, I think Garrett can throw pretty good.
Yeah, he cleared the water at USDGC.
That's right.
Yeah.
He cleared the water opposite handed in the distance competition from like the old 18s fairway over to 5s fairway. He cleared the water with an opposite hand throw.
That's gross.
That's impressive. Yeah. So I think that's a pretty solid five, you know.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Calvin, I got to know. What is the rowdiest, wildest, craziest Vegas thing you're going to do this weekend? Because, I mean, when in Vegas, I know you get wild.
You know, I don't know. I don't have any plans. The normal crew of people I hang out with isn't really here either. So I don't know. I'm going to have to find some people to egg me on to go do something, I guess. I don't have any plans.
Okay.
Go see that Michael Jackson Cirque du Soleil show. You know, see if you can get on stage or something. Volunteer.
That could be exciting.
Yeah. I mean, now's the time. If your normal crew isn't there, now's when you go out and get rowdy so they know. No one knows what happened.
Yeah, there's no evidence of any kind.
There's always evidence.
That's true.
Always evidence.
Yeah.
You can't get away with anything anymore.
No, there's a camera
everywhere.
Or a dash cam or a city cam, store cam. There's a camera everywhere. So I know how much you're trouble never you safe. Are.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, we don't want to keep you too late. I do have one other question. What was the dumbest thing that Tour Life asked you tonight? What was their worst question?
Ooh, the worst question, Twirla.
Had to be something Zach asked, right?
No, I'm trying to remember. What was the dumbest thing we talked about? It was so long. I was on there for the whole episode. I was on there for like 2.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
So I'm trying to think. I know there were dumb things, but I'm honestly just drawing a blank.
There's too many. Okay.
We get it.
And I get. I don't need anybody coming at me. Here.
I got a question for you. You know, we'll get your take. What's your take on, you know, Saturday's round, the spotter on 16 being a Jedi?
Let me just tell you, as a non Star Wars fanatic, it didn't excite me the way it did so many others. But not only did I enjoy some time at Bourbon Cowboy with him, but then Sunday he was out there also doing some scorekeeping, and by all accounts, like, next level, world class, top notch. I mean, he had a green and a red lightsaber, the full outfit, energetic. Like, I don't know how that gets topped. And I'll say that just as a fan.
It was on May the 4th. I mean,
and May the 4th.
It was.
Like, I probably didn't fanboy as hard as others, but it was pretty damn good.
I had to question at first if that wasn't EMAC when I first heard about it, that there was a guy. And I was like, well, I mean, EMAC is a huge Star Wars fan. He's got Star Wars tattoos. And I thought, like, there's no way he'd be spotting on 16. But I'm like, maybe he lost a bet. Maybe, I mean, anything possible. And then I quickly, at one point, I think I lunch hour, looked it up. I'm like, okay, not EMAC.
No.
Just to be safe.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. Could you name a better, like, stars aligning in any better way for a better exhibition at all? Anywhere else? You liked it.
Yeah, I was honestly fine with it. The only thing that I thought would be weird is, you know, the only point that Brody brought up about it was, what if someone aced, right? And this thing gets on SportsCenter top 10 and you just got this dude with lightsabers waving them around in the background. That was the only point that I had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, apparently we got clowned even without on SportsCenter with Niklas, even without a Jedi with lightsabers. So
to be fair, 2 points. That one, a SportsCenter person, like, there's a flip of a coin whether they're going to rip on us no matter what. You know, Niklas was at a golf course. He's got a unique name that I think they butchered. Obviously he's European, so on and so forth. So I think there's a flip of the coin whether they take any highlight or a shot seriously right off the bat. And then B, or my second point to that would be, it was so fitting with May the 4th that I think even somebody that did want to rip on it would be like, hey, these guys were into it at this tournament. It's May the 4th. There's a Star Wars theme, you know, worker out there. Like, I do understand what Brody's saying. I don't think it's crazy what he's saying at all. But this was, it was so, like, perfectly lined up on May the 4th. Any other day, yeah, I think the point is more valid. But on that day, I mean, because there's just so many Star Wars fanatics, right? So yeah, I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, if there was some insane shot, you know, at an NBA game or something happened at an MLB game and some celebration involved, someone dressed up similarly, it would hold up.
Yeah, if you had one of your bench guys at the NBA, someone who probably wasn't going to go into the game, sitting there in like a Jedi robe. No, I don't think too many, or had like a Yoda mask.
Or there's a stormtrooper out somewhere. Like, I get his point. I really do. But it's such a cultural, you know, iconic cultural thing that I don't think they would have clowned too hard. And like I said, they maybe would no matter what we do. So
That's fair. That's fair.
That's my counterpoint. Anyway, excuse me. Yeah, I don't want to keep you too long. I know you've had a long day of driving and you've had a long night of podcasting, and we really do appreciate you joining us. You're obviously welcome anytime. You don't have to win, but it's awesome when you do, and congratulations.
You say that, but you don't ever invite me.
You don't need an invite. That's what I'm saying is, like, you could be like, hey, you want me to, I've got this going on or that going on, or hey, you know, you got anyone lined up for Tuesday, or I'd like to jump on Tuesday. Like, you have that open invite anytime.
Do you use the same password all the time?
No, it changes every single week.
Oh, dang. So that would be great if I could just log in unannounced every once in a while.
The only problem with that is if we didn't and you tried to log in, you may kick off the existing guest that might be on if we were to keep same passwords. So that's why, you know.
Wouldn't that be great though? You know, like 1 second you're talking to, you know, whoever, Owen. Paul Macbeth, and the next you're talking to me.
Yes.
I'd be okay with
the that. Uninvited Kelvin drop-ins. Yeah.
Yeah.
We could give
that you, sounds like a segment.
We could give you your own number though. Like, and then
like
just
a bat phone.
Yeah. And then you have your own number. Whenever you wanted to dial in, you just dial in and we bring you into the show. I'm saying we've got options.
If I'm ever watching live and I want to comment on something.
Yeah. If you need to
actually, you assholes, here's what I think. Yeah. Do you feel like you need to be a guest host? I know some of the other podcasts like Tour Life occasionally brings on, you know, they're non-standards, you know, it's Yuli and Paul. And then every once in a while they have other people fill in like tonight. Do you feel like you should be a guest host? Like the three of us, then we're interviewing some fourth.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm a good interviewer, you know. Mm. I don't know. I guess only time could tell. Maybe I'll have to try it sometime.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd love to know what you would ask other golfers.
Yeah, I mean, because none of this is scripted. This is all off the cuff. And all you got to do is just spit some stuff out.
I guess it depends on, you know, the golfer.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like how you would ask questions breaking down someone's round. Like we had Emily Weatherman on earlier. Like, what would you ask her? You know?
Yeah. What do you want to know most? Let's see if we can answer it. What do you, if Emily was on with us right now, what would you most want to know coming off her third place performance this weekend, 18 years old on tour now and all that? What would you want to know?
First question, true, false. You think your disc was inbounds?
She said true. She thought it was. True.
Okay. Cool. I can't really input, you know, I don't have like all the pictures are hard to tell. And then like, I wasn't there, but that would be the first question I would ask, you know, that's all I want. Like that was probably like the biggest thing right there. You know, you just.
Yeah. I mean, false. Nothing for nothing. Like obviously your win in overtaking Ricky in the final round. Missy winning in a very rare now aggregate playoff over the defending champ Haley. Those are your two leading stories, but right there, right underneath it is Emily's weekend slash her hole 18 call. Like, and I kind of hate that call overshadowed maybe even her play a little bit, right? Like, I hate that.
She played really well. She played really well. I watched a bunch of that final round, so. She was playing really well. She was right there in contention. I feel like she played really good at Texas States or something.
That was the one other event this year specifically where I think she finished eighth. And, you know, our other events were 20th and 30th and 40th or whatever. But, yeah, that was the other event she played really well on the tour this year.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool to see a new face. You know, doing well. I don't know. Is she like on tour now or is she just out for a couple tournaments?
Yeah. Well, she told us that she is on tour. She doesn't have the tour card. So she actually has to play some of the qualifiers in order to get into we looked at her upcoming schedule and I was like, you're not hitting the North, you know, the West Coast swing. You're not
Portland, getting Beaver State, any of those.
And so she said she has a whole list of events that she has to qualify to get into. And she's hoping at some point she can earn her tour card. If she keeps playing like this, it won't be a problem.
No, I mean, definitely not. You know, placing high, getting a lot of points. I don't know how many tour cards they hand out on the FPO side, but
32 or something. I don't know. I'm just making numbers up.
I don't know, but yeah, she keeps playing well. It should be no problem at all.
Yeah, it was certainly very impressive. Speaking of playing well, what is if you had $500 that you just genuinely didn't care about. What is the game of choice in Vegas? Game or style or gambling mechanism? What is that where you'd go to with $500 that truly was you're okay with win, you know, losing or not?
I feel like you know you just I'm not really a gambler, so I'm just going to go in there on probably either play blackjack or the roulette wheel, you know, one of those two. But I'd say probably blackjack would probably be my first choice. But, you know, it's possible, you know, just spin the wheel, you know. Yeah. Put your money down. Maybe you get lucky.
All right. Will you do that with any money this weekend? Will you as much as put down $10 or $100 at any point?
Probably not. Not really a gambler. But, you know, you never know. You know, you... As I said, my normal crew's not here. Maybe I get mixed up with some rowdy folk.
Vinny falls in with the wrong crowd.
Before you know it, I'm just out at the casino late night.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Vinny and Gannon Burr at the blackjack table.
Yeah, I guess Gannon can get in there.
Because he can now.
Yeah, he could last year. Happy birthday. Gannon Burr actually turned 19 today still, and out in Vegas. It's even earlier. So happy birthday to Gannon Burr. That was a quick side note. So just a pro tip. If you're at anywhere in Vegas and a female walks by and says, "Hey, I like your pants," just ignore her and just keep walking. It's quite an interesting line that I've heard more than once, usually by lady callers. And I think the most entertaining things that can happen in Vegas is the absurd opening lines that you often hear from
ladies of the night.
Ladies of the night. And I think one that I've heard more than once, maybe they just really like my pants, but I've heard more than once now in the years that I visited, just in passing, like literally walking the opposite way. "Oh, I like your pants." Like, what a weird line. And it's just one that stuck with me. So clearly it worked. It to some degree it that worked. I remembered it, but that's as far as it went. So, pro tip.
All right. Well, thanks for the pro tip.
It's just so weird. Caught me off guard.
You caught us all off guard with that statement, Terry. I'm not going to lie.
I'm just saying there's a lot of funny shenanigans that I know can take place and all. But when I think about just the most bizarre things and like ways that you can overhear some of these lines go, that one is the one that sticks out. So to some degree, it must work. I don't know if they keep using it. All right. Well, I'll do my best to not make. I canceled. I had a flight going to Vegas tomorrow because I thought I might be part of a media crew. And just tonight I canceled it. Like, oh, this is officially not happening. But if it turns out that I find myself out there for the latter part of the weekend, I'll come find you. And we'll head to the blackjack table.
All right. Sounds good.
I'll keep you out of the rest of the trouble.
Yeah. Once again, that's falling in with the wrong type of people. If you're out with Terry, you've fallen in with the wrong type of people.
We'll have a good time.
That could still mean you're the wrong crowd. You know?
Yeah. I rest my case.
I have never led anyone astray. See? Speechless. Okay. Calvin, congratulations on this weekend. We'll give you the bat number. You're welcome to call in anytime. We wish you the best of luck this weekend. Obviously, we know you're kicking off that West Coast swing. But seriously, have a really good weekend. Shoot well. And thanks for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Stay safe out there.
Yeah, no problem. Y'all have a nice evening as well.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks, right. Calvin.
Yeah.
Calvin Heinberg.
Your DDO champion. And not going to fall in with the wrong crowd, no matter what anybody says.
No. He is a very wise man. I don't have any doubts that he'll be safe and secure and doing what he needs to be doing. But actually, you that is a good point. I Heart Disc Golf said, "Don't you have to be 21 to gamble?" That's a good question, actually, in some of those casinos out there. Obviously, I haven't had to worry about that for a lot of years. You might be right, though, that it is 21, now that I think about it out there. So Gannon
maybe not
sneaking into the right places. Justin. All right. Well, we'll go through a few quick things. Justin says, "Why isn't Vegas on the tour anymore?" Really, they just the tour made a decision at some point in the offseason that rather than kicking off the tour and hosting the All-Star Weekend over on the West Coast, they decided to kick it off on the East Coast and bringing the chess.com Invitational being the opening event, also then being in that same area the weekend before, ultimately for the All-Star Weekend. I think there were plans at some point to possibly incorporate maybe a Disney-like or Disney World-like atmosphere and or setting or backdrop, venue, landscape, whatever you want to call it. It didn't materialize this year. I don't know if it will or won't in the future, but with them not doing being in Tucson or in Arizona to kick off the All-Stars, I think that snowballed into then also not using Vegas because you're not going to be all the way out in Vegas to then bring somebody back to Texas to then go off in the other directions. It was largely a logistical thing. I know a lot of people in Las Vegas were clearly disappointed. A lot of people in Arizona were disappointed because we've been, you know, kicking off our season in some capacity, literally for 25 years out there in some capacity. For many years, the Memorial kicked off what then became the National Tour, and Vegas was always the weekend before or weekend after, whatever the case was. And then the Pro Tour rolled along, and then the Pro Tour was exclusively kicked off for a couple of years at the Memorial, and then Vegas was still kicking off or being part of the National Tour. Eventually, the Memorial fell off of the Pro Tour, and then Vegas became the kickoff. And then Arizona got used for the All-Star Weekend. So that was kind of all of that evolution over 20 and 25 years. And so this year was a very stark contrast to then head over to Florida to incorporate them the way that it was this year. And obviously we'll continue to see how it all unfolds in future years. I feel like the Florida area will likely be the kickoff for at least the next few years, assuming we continue to use the Brooksville course, the Olympus course, the way that we have and how well received it was this year. It's for sure going to likely, it's likely going to remain on the tour in some capacity. And if it makes sense to kick off the season there, well, then that's probably where it will happen. So that's, yeah, I hope that kind of answers you real quick. Speaking of the May 4th, also pretty cool in that James Conrad, Nate Sexton, and Will Schusterick also all share that May 4th birthday. Yeah. We, you know, jokes have been made now for a couple of years. If you follow me and now more fancy people like Stat Mando, just the fact that like you think of the
three major winners,
three USDGC winners, highest rated birthday, one could argue, if you know, in some average, if you average something out in that capacity. And then also, coincidentally, they're all 4 years apart in age.
That's interesting.
Sexton brought that up a few weeks ago when we were talking about this very thing in Bend, that they're all 4 years apart from one another. Schusterick being the youngest, then Conrad, then Sexton. I think that's what he was telling me. So kind of interesting. Yesterday, a world champ, Valerie Doss, celebrating a birthday along with Madison Walker. And then, as I just said, Gannon Burr. So this little stretch here, and we got birthdays all year long, obviously, but this little stretch is quite jam packed with some highly.
Your hands must be sore from writing out all those cards.
Well, it's the stamping them. I do a stamp book I get out my Cricut machine and then I do the whole handmade card thing, draw them all pictures of what it looks like for them and me, you know,
together, just hanging out. Yeah, it makes sense.
So that's what I try. But anyway,
Scott Pittner asks, how have the gallery crowds been at events so far this year? Larger, smaller, about the same as previous years? There has been some conversation online about the size of crowds. In general, I think we've seen a little bit of a decline in the numbers. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. DDO this weekend, obviously having a smaller AM field, you know, where they used to bring in 1,000 people this year. I think it was like 350 or 400 ish, I believe. So if you figure the same percentage of AMs are going to go on Sunday, clearly, you're going to have a smaller crowd than if the 400, we'll just say, versus the 1,000. I don't know. I mean, it's not shocking. I think you're going to see some bigger crowds in Portland I think you'll see bigger crowds, obviously, some of the European events. Because, again, they don't have the chance to see a lot of our top pros, especially you'll see it at more than likely the European Open. And then you'll probably see a decent crowd at Worlds. I think other than that, you'll more than likely you'll see the same-ish crowds as last year. Des Moines always pulls out decent crowds. MVP is, it's always hard to tell the crowd size at MVP just because it's so weirdly set up as far as how, where the crowds can sit, because you've got like hole eight and then they've going to have a new one at the top of the hill. And I think it'll be fine. But I think overall the events that we've seen, probably a slight decline in the number of spectators.
Yeah. And to be fair, one of the main pictures that circulated, I was a little disingenuous in the angle. They showed the 2022, maybe it was 2021 or 2022, and then the 23. And then they showed a completely different angle of one of the holes that if they actually just rotated the camera like 90 degrees, there was a much more sizable gallery than what they were trying to depict. Now, I agree with everything that you just said in terms of, yes, the overall attendance is lower. I'm not denying that. But one specific picture that circulated or is as we speak, I just felt like, it wasn't the exact same spot, so to speak, all for all three pictures. It was the same hole, but then they were pointing to a place where there wouldn't have been
as many people. It's not telling necessarily a true story.
I think you said earlier that cameras lie, Johnny.
I did say the cameras lie, Terry. I definitely
sometimes they do. They don't lie in Vegas. So you be careful out there, Calvin. You be very careful. All right, couple other things. We just talked about that. Why are there no longer U.S. Silver Series events? I think there's some.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Branding.
There's no need for them.
There's branding, and then there's opportunities and what they're trying to accomplish. Did they serve the point? And now we're seeing these Q series, which to me feel they're largely similar in what they're accomplishing and doing. In fact, even more so because they're technically a qualifying event of sorts. And I think some of the golfers, a lot of the golfers kind of replied that they didn't need more golf to play. And these silver events were put into these pockets in these scenarios where a lot of golfers were maybe thinking that could or should be a weekend off or a travel weekend.
But they were pressured to play because of the points.
Whether it was the points or some other external pressures. And so that ultimately ended up being the feedback. So couldn't Vegas have been a silver with live coverage? No.
Because those don't exist.
Well, A, they don't exist, but B, live coverage is now become a ton of money. I mean, it's never been cheap, but more than ever. If you want a full experience of a live covered event where you're talking about the 6 to 8 cameras, the drone operator, all the bells and whistles, all the people in the control room, all the replays, the graphics, the booth people, like, we used to offer live with like 3 people in the early days, which obviously was literally just a fraction of what's being offered now. But I think if you provide less than the full experience, you're setting yourself up for ridicule and frustration from viewers. no matter how many times you explain it and say, hey, this is a lighter version of live coverage, people still would not, A, they would not read that. B, they would read it and not comprehend it. Or C, they would read it, comprehend it, and then still complain about it. So you're to offer anything less than the full live package, I can understand no one wanting to do. And then to top it all off, there's the protocols that go along with being on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, that then you're also having Disc Golf Pro Tour standards and other protocols that are in place that the local committee or local event may or may not want to necessarily adhere to. There's certain rules and things that the Las Vegas event may do this weekend that don't line up perfectly what you saw last weekend at the Dynamic Disc Open, just from certain standards and protocols. Now, of course, there's still going to be a professional event. They may do some things better. They may do some things a little lighter, but it's going to have a slightly different feel to it than if it's a silver event. And yeah, that's one of the biggest problems I feel like we have in all of disc golf right now is a lot of us have seen and heard that players of all levels, all skill levels and ages are going to your local B and C tier. And you kind of are expecting like pro tour level amenities or really? Pro tour level stuff, just everything. And the pro tour is in an elite class of its own right now. And so just remember when you sign up for that C tier at your local park, that probably has one person maybe running it. Don't expect pro tour. Don't have pro tour expectations. That's not to say they're not running a good event, but I, you know, it's what we talked about earlier. There's this disconnect when sometimes you see what happens on the largest stage and you want to emulate or copy it. And like things like rope as OB. And then that, you know, can miss the mark. And then similarly, you can host an event and people are showing up saying, well, where's this and where's that and where's these things? Those things don't happen at that level often. That's why it happens at an elite level, because there's elite things that are going into it.
I was pissed there were no cameras this weekend following me and
I know.
And Paul Holman.
Yeah. So
couldn't believe it. I was like, hey, Paul Holman's here, people.
Joe Ponytail asks a question. Why don't you roll credits for all those people that do the live production and camera work at the end of the live broadcast? That's...
We used to
used to happen.
Yeah, we used to do
when it was like 10 of us.
When it was like 10 of us. And we could name all the cameramen. I mean, there are obviously...
That's a good question.
Yeah, 100%. We could definitely do that. I think there are obviously, you know, give or take whatever you want to include, the control room, the cameramen, the people that help the cameramen, the guys that do a lot of the replay, I mean, the social media replays that are the PAs that are helping out, the stat guys. I mean, there's a lot you could do it. I think
it's silent stream announcers.
Yeah, those are my favorite announcers. It's my favorite commentator. I think maybe it's just it's work to kind of keep that up to date every week. And B, you worry that someone's going to be offended if you miss them. Like, oh, you didn't put me in there. I did. You know.
Well, and again, not inconceivable, clearly.
Yeah, it could happen.
It could.
Just another step.
Yeah. That's above my pay grade. I'll say that much. Clearly, you nor I ever press those buttons or would create said document or file.
Nope.
The follow up to that would be, and this is could get figured out, but are you recognizing the local organizing committee as well in any capacity? And or your I almost said UDisc scorekeepers, your PDGA scorekeepers that are out there. I don't know where you draw the line. There'd have to be a line drawn somewhere. And like you said, that may or may not offend anyone. But I don't know. Is that common? Is that common practice for events of our magnitude? And what I mean by like other internet show platform like practice, I wonder if credits are normal or not.
I have no idea.
I wouldn't be opposed to it happening, but I'm also not one to say, hey, I'm in charge of that.
Oh, whatever you want.
Or I need it to happen.
You want your recognition. How was it doing the general commercial? Did you negotiate royalties for every one of those generals sold?
I am flattered. I'll just say this. The same media production company that put together the Matty O Four More Years West Side commercial, they had reached out to me and said, hey, we have this idea. This was last week. Hey, we have this idea for what we're going to do. Could we get you to do a voiceover of sorts or a voice read or whatever? And I said, an ad read, whatever. I said, absolutely. I would be honored to be a part of it. Sure. So I did that. And I don't know if I'm going to spoil. This is a Smashbox exclusive. There may ultimately become even an alternate ending or a different follow-up sequel.
A sequel?
To that.
Not a prequel. Commercial,
or maybe a series of commercials. I don't know. Wow. But let's just say I had even more work to do. So, yes, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate them.
I want to hear the outtakes of Terry screwing it up.
Honestly?
Sure. Yeah, you're so good.
Pretty damn close to like one or two takes. Like, I think maybe there was three. And there was only an extra take on one of them because I wanted to do it and be like, hey, here's another option. Let's do it one more time. But I don't know. I don't know how well they were received. I could only really hear what Ian and Germ or Ian and Sarah reacted to. And they can't hear the audio. I did see a few people say and recognize like the special effects / graphics that legitimately went into making them was industry quality, like above our industry quality. And that's awesome to hear because I know they did put in a lot of work. And for anyone that didn't hear it already, they legit blew up that basket. Like went out with some, is it Tannerite? I don't know what it is.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't blow things up.
Not enough apparently, but they legit like blew up and destroyed that basket as part of the overall production and process. So somebody tell me, I think it's Tannerite, something like that. It feels kind of weird to then be in the commercial, but I'm good with it. And I hold no, I don't want to say loyalty, but I'm happy to help out. The crew that does those obviously is then doing a lot of media stuff for House of Dis. Hence, I did it with West Side, and then I had the opportunity to work for what ended up being a DD commercial. I'll work for anybody that wants to pay me. Did you find any? They did not say Dynamite. I know that. I could have swore it started with a T, but you're not seeing it. Anyway, they used legitimate TNT. Okay. Stan says, I just watched the Stokely live reaction show on YouTube. Live reaction, watch along for the final round.
Yeah, I think he
is that what you watch.
Yeah, I think he's been doing that.
I Heart Disc Golf said, I think everyone loved it. It is right up there with Jonathan's commercials. Well, that's high accolades and praise for sure, because I know everybody certainly loves those commercials over there at Latitude. He does such a great job.
Bob Goyke says, Tannerite is right, Terry. That's the correct explosive.
Sand Man says the same, Tannerite. Okay. Not Tanner wrong, Tanner right. I Heart Disc Golf said, oh yeah, this is something I did want to talk about. He says, you have 1 to 2 people on the ground, 1 to 2 people in the booth, producers, feed guys, sound guys, camera operators, drone operators, ground crew. Yes, all those. What I was going to lead to though is, all of that. And then I think even a few more you would include. What I will say is this was the first weekend, because a lot of people asked why was I there when Brian was there. This was the first weekend the Pro Tour actively said, let's have 2 people on course. Now, this was kind of officially technically done as well back at the Tour Championship last year when I think they had Germ on a card and then maybe Brian on another card. But that format is obviously very different.
It was a different
format. But this weekend, I was brought there with the exclusive intention of being Chase Card reporter, sideline reporter. First of all, hats off to the Pro Tour for just in general saying like, hey, there's been a lot of action on the Chase card. Let's have another person out there watching and seeing what's going on. Cause otherwise you're asking like a Perkins or a Brian to either bounce back and forth or somehow try to know what's going on, you know, in both scenarios. So I was really flattered and privileged to be able to go do this, because this was not on my schedule.
And we saw both divisions.
Yeah.
Gannon Burr and Emily Weatherman.
Yeah, exactly. So it was useful in that sense, very much so. Now, what I do want to clarify, sure, it was just one internet guy trying to be mean to me. But what I want to clarify is someone had said something along of me being useless. That's fine. I'll take that comment. But they said I was talking over the booth and I was chiming in when not asked. I'm just going to tell you people so you know from the back end. There's going to be a slight adjustment if we continue to have this style of anyone being on a chase card. And we had two brand new color, relatively new color announcers in the booth. It's a timing and logistics scenario that needs to just get ironed out. Every time I spoke this weekend, I was instructed either by the producer or by Ian or the booth to talk.
So much like children growing up, you were told to speak when spoken to. Otherwise, keep your mouth shut.
Correct. And I did that. The problem was, in a few of these newfound scenarios, the booth sometimes didn't fully comprehend that they were to stand down while I was about to talk. So I have a producer in my ear, Mo, saying, Terry, we're going to Weatherman live on this shot. I want you to call it. So I would turn on my mic and I'd say, oh, we've got Emily. It looks like she's got a left to right wind. She's throwing it. Oh, it's on the right side. Meanwhile, potentially Ian and or Sarah didn't maybe hear that
instruction.
And they also then called the shot as they're supposed to do, except for when I've been called on to call the shot.
So it's just a little bit of coordinating.
There was a couple of times of that happening. So I'll politely say F off to the person who wanted to accuse me of just like randomly chiming in as if I'm doing it to get a quota of words in, or I'm so desperate to have airtime. Not the case. It's more of a case of this coordination that needs to be honed in and perfected. I was doing my job, and I'm not throwing the other guys under the bus either. I'm just saying this like needs to get ironed out and then it'll flow much more smoothly. But to think that I'm just out there trying to turn on the mic and get words in because I so desperately need to hear myself talk. Believe that that is not the case. So
Justin asks, could Emily Weatherman have shot a provisional shot? I said, technically you can always throw a provisional shot, but ultimately not really, because the decision was made. It was a group decision. There was no, it wasn't like a rules call, so to speak. It was a definitive in or out. So there would have been no point in her throwing a provisional, because if someone's not there, they're not going to be able to tell you whether it was in. It's not a question you can go to the TD and go, was I in or out? You can't use photographic evidence. You can't use anything like that. So there would have been no point. It's not like she was in a weird spot where it's like, I don't know if this is in or out.
If this section of the course is
correct.
In or out.
If this section of the course, this creek that I'm in, is that casual? Was that it's not that type of call. It was a definitive call. So while she could have thrown a provisional, it would have been a pointless provisional.
What I would think would have happened, let's just play pretend and say she calls a provisional, she throws it both ways, then the foursome the entire group goes to the official and or TD at the end. They would explain what happened, and the first thing the TD would say is, well, what did you guys think? And presumably the other three who called her out would say, well, we all thought she was out. And he or she would say, okay, well then
she's out.
Like that's that in that specific case, that's how that would have gotten officiated, so to speak.
Stanman says the no photo slash video evidence is weird. Not really, because as we said, cameras lie. Angles are funny. You take a picture of it one way really slanted versus the other way. There's so many ways that things can get skewed with cameras unless you are on site and looking at it directly yourself. I'm actually being a video guy, here. I'm totally fine with that.
What I will say to this is I absolutely could have taken five pictures that would have made it look so much more favorable for Emily and I could have probably taken five pictures or angles that would have made it seemingly obvious that she was out. Like, it was without a question of a doubt, where you're like, oh man, I was really wrong. Like, as Johnny just said, it's all about the angle and seeing Felix's or anyone else's camera and then a blown up screenshot with the amount of pixels that we're offering. I promise you, your angle and your assessment was not better than Rebecca Cox's or Natalie Ryan's or Jessica Weiss's.
But they weren't sending in a Culver's like I was.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you didn't say that. I mean, if you got a concrete mixer in one hand, then yeah, definitely you have the right to make a call from 3,000 okay. miles away.
I didn't. I had a malt, but still.
Okay. Well, then you were qualified.
Okay. Thank you. Someone asking, any Daylock coverage this weekend? I don't know if there is. If so, it's probably CCDG. That's usually who's covered Daylock in the past. But
No.
Okay.
Here's all I'll say, because I only know some half truths here tonight, so I'll keep spewing them.
Oh, good.
No, I saw a few weeks ago, I looked at De La Viega's event this weekend taking place, which is being presented, I believe, by DGA instead of Innova, which is a significant change from the past few years. But what I would say to that is, I saw on there a different production company that's not like one that's on the road. Okay. That's what was posted a few weeks ago.
Okay.
At least.
Well, then.
And so
I love a new group, honestly. I always hope that when we get a new group of camera people and editors that we see something different or original.
According to, now I don't know when this was posted, but it is on the official Disc Golf Scene about this tournament. It says post-production coverage by, oh wow, they've added people even, Local Route Disc Golf.
I've heard of them.
Top World Disc Golf, never which is the only one that I saw, I feel like, a few weeks ago. And then Myron Disc Golf. So MPO and FPO will play De La Viega Friday, 24 holes, tee times. Saturday, Pinto Lake, 20 holes, tee times. And Sunday, tee times for De La Viega, 24 holes. So that's what's taking place this weekend.
Okay.
And last time I had looked, which I feel like was a week or two ago, I believe I only saw Top World Disc Golf. And I was like, oh, I don't think I recognize that channel or that brand in terms of post-production. So it looks like they've added two more to the overall list. So there you go. How, what, you know as much as we do now officially as to when and next day or not, commentators, cameras, who knows? I don't know any of those details, but that's what's posted to the Disc Golf Scene. All right. Unrelated to disc golf, you probably didn't get around to it, and I've only watched the first, I don't know, half hour. The roast of Tom Brady.
Not going to bother. I think via social media, I think I've seen every funny joke on there.
That's possible.
I'm not going to bother. I don't care that much enough about it.
The little bit I watched of it, of course, I feel like all those roasts. I mean, I also always feel uncomfortable to a degree of like how deep. Obviously, that's the point. It's a roast. I get it. I'm not an idiot. But like some of those cuts really seem brutal. Again, I understand that's the point of them. But man, and I think it's pretty long. And so I've only gotten I managed to watch like a half hour or 45 minutes of it. But I know it's very much, as you just said, though, social media has a lot of it.
Yeah, they have pretty much every main joke, the ones that made people uncomfortable, the ones that were vulgar, the ones that were, you know, I think I've seen the best jokes come out of all of it, and I'm totally fine.
Because you're such an anti-Tom Brady?
No, I just don't care, honestly.
Oh, because you don't like funny.
I don't like funny, yeah.
It's your big funny-less jerk face.
Yeah, that's what it is, Terry. That's what it is. Scott Pittner asks the eternal question that will cause a Wisconsin civil war. Are you taking Cops or Culver's or Custard? Both of them, I think Cops are better, but it's also a slightly smaller brand.
So much more difficult to get your hands on too, because there's like what?
There's four of them, maybe, yeah, something like that in the area. Cops is a, I think, a better food. and I think it's a little bit better custard. But Culver's is good. They're everywhere now. So
yeah, from just an ease and accessibility standpoint, yeah, I don't know. As people are saying, I only know Culver's in Ohio. Yeah, the same Culver's that's in Ohio, also in now Arizona and California and other parts of the country as they continue to spread. But yeah, Culver's started right here in Wisconsin, for those that don't
Sauk
know.
City. This year, I think we've talked about this, Top Chef is doing Top Chef Wisconsin. So they brought in all the chefs last summer. And the hosts, obviously, who are professional chefs and whatnot, they went to a bunch of the different custard places in the state. And the main host, Kish, she still won't say which one is her favorite. She's like, I honestly don't want to cause a problem. She's like, they were all good, but she's like, I have a favorite, but I won't say what it is, because I think they went to Leon's, which I used to live a block mm-hmm. away from, which is phenomenal. Probably Gilly's, which is great. Cops, Culver's, like just all the different places in the Milwaukee area.
Oscars. I don't know if they do custard or
Oscars does custard, I believe.
Is it custard? Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of places to get custard here, and
there's a reason I have such a beautiful figure.
they're all pretty good.
And so. While you're at it, you get yourself some cheese curds. Can't really go wrong with that. One disappointing note from this weekend, I'm embarrassed to admit, I went to Emporia and I did not make an obligatory stop at Radius for anything, not for the delicious food or pizza or any of their beverages or anything of that nature. I apologize. I have failed you, Emporia.
I've been to Radius, mm-hmm. but I would say I think I've only eaten there maybe twice of all the times I've been there, just because usually when we've gone there, it's been glass blown open. There's 1,000 people in town and it's tough to get a seat.
And they're so popular and so good that
they're
exactly.
So usually you go in there and you're like, all right, well, I'm getting here at the end of the night. Maybe the kitchen's closing, or you sit down, you see somebody, you sit down and chat with them, and you've probably already eaten. It's all those things. So.
Ryan asked if I did go to the sandwich place. I don't know if you're talking about Doobie's or Planet Subs, but unfortunately neither. Again, I was on the down low for most of the weekend, and things were kept pretty low key for the most part. So no, unfortunately, neither. However, I'll hopefully make a redemption. I'll be there for a longer period of time, it looks like, for the World Championships next month, the Masters Worlds. So I'll be able to fulfill all of those obligations that I feel like I need to be there.
Eric Sterner asked, so no live coverage this weekend? And I said, no, there is live coverage this weekend. The Copenhagen Open.
Yeah, just got to go to Denmark.
Well, no, you don't have to go to Denmark. No,
that's Karen. Where it's best to watch it.
Well,
is in Denmark.
It is. It is
best on their time.
That's true. It is best to watch it there. But there will be live coverage of the Copenhagen Open. The production is going to be done by primarily an overseas crew, so it won't be
as part of the Disc Golf Network.
So imagine the a lot of the people who ran Disc Golf Stream will probably be participating in the Copenhagen Open on the Disc Golf Network now. So, and as I said to other people, there are a few people on that Copenhagen Open registration list that are playing Copenhagen, that played DDO, that are registered for OTB.
Mm.
I would be very careful if you're doing fantasy picks or if you're gambling or whatever you're doing. Maybe take a look at who's playing the events back to back, or and maybe avoid them, because I have a feeling that we're going to see some people like Vinny talking about Turku. I think that you're going to see some players that you think are playing Copenhagen, maybe not play Copenhagen. I don't know if that's, I can't say that for sure, but I would not be shocked to see some people withdraw last minute.
Tim says, if there's a disc close to OB, you have to travel to Copenhagen. I'm not going to lie. There's been a lot of uncertainty about efforts from me this weekend, and Denmark was one that I very much had on my radar. Maybe I'll buy the ticket tomorrow and still go. But yes, I feel that I'm missing out in not being any part of that. But like Johnny just said, I don't believe we're seeing any of the US-based Disc Golf Pro Tour media going over there. It's going to be European commentators along with their crews and their equipment. And I think Phil Delone, who does is our, what's his official title? Tour director or something of that nature. That's something like that.
I just know him as Phil.
I think Phil's going to be over there in that capacity and role, but that's not a media related thing. So, yeah.
Well, Terry, we've got a Patreon giveaway tonight.
What?
We do. Patreon.com.
Roll those dice.
/SmashboxTV. If you want to be eligible to be entered into our giveaway every single week, it's a dollar. It's a dollar to our Patreon.
Minimum. At,
exactly. Minimum.
I mean, it could be more.
We could be more. Yeah. I mean, if you want to give
us more. We'll take
more.
We could use more.
Could always use a little bit more. Patreon.com/SmashboxTV. Or you can enter in on the website. I'll tell you that another night. But 133 people are eligible for our giveaway tonight. I've sorted them overall by their address if they have it. So if you have an address, it's up at the top. If you don't, you're at the bottom. And I sorted it reverse. So Sulkins.
Back that address up.
Sulkinsgaten is up at the top.
Hmm.
From Mr. Mikke Nielsen. So that's the city, I believe, that he lives in. So ultimately, maybe that's a street. I don't know. Oh, yeah, because he lives in Uppsala. So that's probably the city. Anyway, that's the street he lives on. So I'm doxing him. But ultimately, so that's our number one. And then we go all the way down to the people who don't have any addresses. But Terry, we have 133 people eligible for our giveaway tonight. Tell me, do you love me? And how many draws should I do?
Three in honor of Emily Weatherman finishing third.
All right. That's as good as any reason to do three. All right. Our first number is 54. Our second number is 66. Our third and final number is 106. 106. So it's going to be someone who doesn't have an address.
Ooh. So we definitely need to have you look for an email from me.
Zach Webb. Congratulations, yeah. Zach Webb. Yeah.
Sweet.
There you go. You've been
Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, you've been a Patreon supporter since 2020. Congratulations, Zach.
One of our favorites.
I'll send Terry your email. He can reach out to you, get your address so we can get that stuff shipped.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. And Zach, if you ever see Terry, tell him you like his pants. It won't be weird, I promise.
No, I'm okay with that. I'll take it. I'll take it. Yes, rigged. Did I meet Ed Root out there this weekend? I sure did. Block party.
I miss that. I do.
Lots of good people. I want to take it in, and then you start walking, and then you talk to this booth and then that booth, and like I love having all these conversations, seeing all of our pros out there hawking all their goods and their support discs, and just so many incredible people to connect with. I'll give Billy Lund a shout out. He was out there along with Joe Carey having a good time.
Good.
And Billy, there was the MP40 and other divisions also played throughout the weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was awesome to kind of keep a wandering eye on some of those scores. Dixon Jowers finished in second. It was all said and done. And I apologize, the gentleman from Oklahoma, another gentleman from Oklahoma actually took it down, but Billy finishing in third and all made for a good night at the Bourbon Cowboy. I had to.
I'm sure you did. You were forced.
I ran into the owner who recognized me
is it bad when a bar owner recognizes you in general? Especially when you're only there
once or twice a year.
Twice a year.
Yeah. Susan, we're friends.
I don't doubt that. I think I've met her once. So.
Yeah, you have. But yeah, nice. She just welcoming to everybody.
I agree. It was fun doing the podcasts from the Bourbon Cowboy.
All right, I think that's enough. Holy cow, how did we go almost 4 hours tonight?
By having two guests.
That helps. And lots of great conversation. So, thank you everyone, for you crazy people that are still either here live and or you've taken in roughly 2 hours of regular show and then 2 hours of after show, whatever it's been. Thank you so much. Thank you to Kelvin Heimberg for joining us. Best of luck to all the competitors, truly, in all these big events that I know I kind of rattled off this weekend. There's a bunch of them taking place all around the country. Maybe I'll show up at one of them.
There's going to be so much post-production over the next week.
I know, and that's what's crazy. And I've got some of my own post-production bonus action to still get released.
I wouldn't release it this week.
Yeah, so there's plenty of stuff that's... coming. So to all of our smashies out there, all of you live chatters, you guys help make it so fun, and you're the main reason why we continue to be live when we do these on Tuesday nights. We could really record these anytime, but the live interaction is just another layer of fun that's been brought along. So best of luck to all the players. Stay safe wherever you are, whether you're playing in a one round, two round, three round, or four round event this weekend. Be safe, play well, get those birdies and all that other good stuff. For Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. That's Smashbox TV Podcast 505's After Show. We love our smashies. We love you. Thanks for joining. We'll see you next week if you bring some good-looking pants. We'll see you then when you step inside the Smashbox.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.